You're listening to New Churches Podcast, a production of Send Network on newchurches.com. We discuss all things church planting. If you're looking to take your next step toward multiplication, you're in the right place. newchurches.com provides relevant and reliable resources for church planters, church multipliers, and disciple makers. Our growing library features pastors, planters, and church leaders like Ed Stetzer, David Platt, Trillia Newbell, Christine Hoover, Dahati Lewis, Trevin Wax, and many others.
Hey, Ed Stetzer here, and we are with another episode of the New Churches Podcast. They tell me not to tell the numbers, but I think we're like in the 700s, so we're super excited having some conversations. And one of the great things that I've experienced is having recently moved. You know, I was 7 years at Wheat College there, the Dean and the Billy Graham Center. And then just, several months ago, I moved to California. And by the way, by the time you're listening to this, it's cold in the rest of the country. It's not cold here. But anyway, that's another story for another day. And I now lead the Talbot School of Theology at Biola University. Frequent listeners are aware of this. But one of the things that I have learned and grown to appreciate is just how we have this marquee program in apologetics. And so I get to bring to you one of my colleagues to talk about apologetics. His name's Craig Hazen. He's the founder and director of the master's program in Christian apologetics and also director of the master's program of the concentration in science and religion. He is editor of a philosophy journal. He's written multiple articles, books, and more. He's a recipient of the Fisher Award, the highest faculty honor at Biola, has lectured across North America and Europe. I was just teaching in Oxford, and I had lunch with the folks at the Oxford Center for Christian Apologetics, and all they wanted to talk to me about was how awesome the apologetics program was and their appreciation of Craig Hazen and more. So we're super excited to have him in the conversation today. Craig, thanks for joining us and thanks for your work. So tell us just at the beginning, because, you know, a lot of people, what's apologetics? They might think of one book that I've read, an apologetics book. So how, define for us what apologetics is, and then we'll talk some about what it looks like in practice.
Yeah, I'm glad you're bringing that up. I go to a different church about every other weekend and put on conferences. And sometimes we have a big conference and there'll be 1,000 people there. And they've been invited to hear something really great at their church. And it turns out to be an apologetics conference. And half the people in the audience don't know what apologetics is. I guess those are real people of faith, you know, on somebody's testimony they're turning out. But so it's always my great pleasure to just define it in a kind of a basic way. And probably one of the most basic ways is just offering reasons for faith, offering reasons that you put your trust in Jesus. It doesn't have to be any scarier than that. We can go a lot deeper, of course. And Dallas Willard, though, actually went even more shallow than that in a profound way, the way he does. And Dallas Willard, in the book he wrote before he passed away, it actually had an apologetic slant to it. And he defined apologetics simply as the ministry of helping people. And I know that took the wind out of a lot of antagonistic sails because people don't think it's particularly helpful. I mean, but that's how Dallas Willard, a brilliant philosopher and theologian, saw it. It's a ministry of helping people answer their questions. People are wandering around with doubts and difficulties. And honestly, they do sometimes more harm than good because they're walking around with those. And if you can just help them with the questions, because it turns out, and I may be sharing the end of the podcast here right now, but it turns out Christianity is true. And we can know it to be true.
Right.
And that's what we do in apologetics.
So yeah, I mean the truth of Christianity. Jesus said, "I am the way, the truth, and the life." And of course, then that famous verse, probably apologists love, is "Be ready to give an answer to everyone who asks you to give the reason for the hope that you have." 1 Peter 3:15. I guess the question is: it seems to me that I started saying this about 5 or 10 years ago, having no idea that I'd end up being at the Talbot School of Theology and working with you at the largest apologetics program in the world. But it seems to me that as the culture has become more secular and kind of further away from basic understanding, like I gave this example last week, when I became a Christian, having grown up visiting church on Christmas and Easter, I believed that there was a God. I just didn't think you could know him. I believe he wrote a book. I just didn't think you could understand it. I was youth group age. And then somebody showed me in the Bible that about sin and relationship and forgiveness. But I had all those things. Like I was ready. I was the harvest was plentiful. I was in the harvest and ready. But now, like, you know, showing someone the Bible might not be persuasive or telling people the existence of God. So I started saying about 5 or 10 years ago, I think apologetics is going to become more and more important as the culture becomes more and more secular. Is that the case? And how do you see people engaging in apologetics in really, because we at Church Planters, we want to be evangelizing. We don't just want to be moving sheep around. So is it more important? And how do we engage in apologetics just in regular life of evangelism and church planting?
Yeah, I liked you sharing your bit of testimony there because it reminds me of me. I didn't grow up in a Christian home. I became a Christian as a senior in high school. And during that time, there were a lot of Christians on the public school campus who were gunning for me. You know, they knew I wasn't a believer. And if I was pushed a little bit, I'd even defend an agnostic or an atheist position. And they just thought I, you know, really, really needed Jesus. So they were working on that as best they could. But my main objection wasn't that I thought for sure God didn't exist. Rather, I just thought you couldn't know such a thing. Hmm. It was about knowledge. And that ends up being what Christianity is about. And that's where the assault comes from today, from the secular world. It's about knowledge. In fact, they've even backed off. The new atheists are no longer the new atheists. There's newer atheists. And they've backed off, and they're very unlikely to make some solid comments. They just want to wander around saying, you really can't know.
Okay.
But I think it turns out Jesus and his closest followers were all about knowing, and they wanted us to know.
So how do we, and has it changed? I guess is the question. So I was, you know, I took, as you know, I just took some students from Talbot. You know, when I teach at Wycliffe Hall at Oxford, I bring Talbot students and they take a Talbot course and we're in this again. So we went to Magdalen College in Oxford, and we went down Addison's Walk, and it was on Addison's Walk that that Lewis was, maybe I don't know the right words, converted, but was persuaded of a theistic view of the world, and then later became a Christian while riding a sidecar on a motorcycle. It's a whole fascinating story. But in both of those cases, there was persuasion. Somebody was persuading him. Now, in that case, at Addison's Walk, it was about myth and true myth. And then later on, it was about just the uniqueness of Christ and Christianity. So how do we persuade today when people say there's just no way, there's no truth, or there's no way, you can't know, no one can know. So what is persuasion look like? Is it different with everybody? Unpack some of what that apologetics process looks like.
Yeah, we still make, you know, strong arguments, but we try to do so. In fact, this actually sets the apologetics program at the Talbot School of Theology apart a little bit. We actually try to do so with gentleness and respect.
Right.
And I got to tell you, the one thing that really juices up the gentleness and respect is having a deep knowledge of the subject. That's why I'm just so thrilled about our students and grads who get such a wonderful apologetics education. It's not that they can just answer all the questions. They do so with a care and a peace that actually is very attractive to the unbeliever. You know, back to my high school testimony, it wasn't the students who were witnessing to me and reading me Bible verses that caused the change of heart for me. There was a chemistry teacher who never said a word about Jesus to me, but she just lived life like she had this peace in her heart, this peace in her life, and I had nothing but turmoil. And it was back in the 70s, so she had some cryptic God posters on the wall, you know? And I knew she was some sort of religious person, but because of her and the peace that she was living out day by day, when I finally heard the gospel, I go, that's got to be the thing she has. And so I was very attracted to that peaceful lifestyle. I wanted that desperately. But that didn't seal the deal. I mean, I went forward at an altar call at Calvary Chapel. I mean, I might be in the movie Jesus Revolution, you know.
That's amazing.
That kind of situation. And they took me into a back room, and I was asking questions to the people who were there to counsel me. And although there were a lot of new believers in the room, after a few minutes, I was the only new believer left, and it was counselors trying to answer my questions. So the intellectual side did come into play, But it wasn't before I actually put the connection together, the gospel and a peaceful life. Those are the things that were attracting me so much. Had I not heard any good answers, I don't think I would have followed Jesus, but the whole package came together.
Yeah, there seems to be this, you know, weird, I think it was Newbegin who said that the, you know, the Christian community is the greatest apologetic for the gospel. And so I think there's some of that, but I really have just been convinced in the last decade or so that persuasive, I don't know, argumentation means different things to different people, but persuasive apologetics in the public sphere and in relationships is just so essential today. So what would it look like for, you know, I guess, because I'm trying to kind of tease out and nuance the distinction, because, you know, I love these church planners who are listening, they probably had some evangelism training, things of that sort. So when do we go from evangelism to apologetics? I'm guessing it's a blurry line, but there is some space when we start leaning into some of these questions of the day. What does that look like? And is that something that's, does apologetics come in response to somebody, or does it also come in engaging them? Help me kind of tease out the difference.
Yeah, I do not rush up to a person first thing and say, you know, doubtless you have not encountered the Kalam cosmological argument or something like that. Oh, in fact, I hear some of our newer students doing something like that. And, you know, we try to encourage them otherwise, because it's cringeworthy to see them do that. That's where that peace comes in, because I'm at peace with my own set of beliefs, and and I share those at the right time. I'm much more sensitive to the Holy Spirit when I'm not working out of anxiety when I'm witnessing to a person. So it's that peace comes into play again. But there's definitely a place for answers. In fact, sometimes I like to be a little bit shocking with the answer. You know, somebody will say something that they're deeply convinced of. You know, something that the Bible couldn't possibly be an accurate record of what took place in ancient times, for instance. And I see no reason why we shouldn't go, wow, I just don't see it that way at all. You know, I think you need to read a different book or two, you know, and challenge them in that way. If you're kind enough, but still shaking them a little bit, I think that's worthwhile.
Yeah. So you sort of, helping them question some of their assumptions. So let's keep going down that road, though. So they say, you know, the Bible can't be an accurate account. Where do you keep going? I mean, so what would you read a different book? What would you say? Keep taking us down the apologetics road.
Yeah. Soon after I became a Christian, I went to Thanksgiving dinner at my uncle's house. And my uncle was the smartest guy in our extended family. He had a couple of degrees in physics, and he had heard that I'd become a Christian. And so we're sitting there over turkey dinner, and he brings up the big topic. He goes, all right, Craig, I hear you become a Christian. You don't really believe the Bible, do you? And I asked my Uncle Rob, I said, well, Uncle Rob, tell me, I'm curious. What do you think the Bible is? Oh, my goodness. And so he says, well, you know, the guys down at the lab, we were talking about this the other day, and we're pretty convinced that the Bible was written by inebriated monks in the 1500s.
Wow.
And I didn't know a whole lot about apologetics, but I'd read a little bit by that time in my Christian walk. And I was just praying silently, God, thank you. You have delivered him into my hands, you know.
That's true. That's like the worst description of the biblical origin ever. But yeah.
And we just had a chat about that. But having read a little bit on apologetics gave me the confidence to go after my uncle in a kind and positive way, I hope, even though he had a couple of graduate degrees in hard sciences.
Yeah, I think it's interesting because helping people question their questions is a real, I think I heard Tim Keller say that. So I don't think that's new to me. But helping people question their questions seems to be a key thing. But at the end of the day, I mean, Christianity is true. I almost was going to say we believe Christianity is true, but I think whether we believe it or not, Christianity is true. So Christianity is true. We believe that Christianity is true. How can we even make truth claims about the truth of Christianity in a world that right now just doesn't believe anyone can make those specific truth claims? So is that, do we have to go walk through a lot of philosophy and a lot of, you know, or how do we get there in a regular conversation?
Yeah, I like that question. I get this on a regular basis. oh gosh, I've been in the business so long now that several cycles of, you know, intellectual craziness have passed by and I got to watch it all. Like remember the big postmodern days, you know, I was told on many occasions, you really can't use apologetics anymore because of postmodernism. You know, nobody, it's all relativistic and nobody can discover what truth is. And that's where people are. And so you can't really just come to them with some arguments that lead to the truth. That's when I say it is time for apologetics, folks. Because generally, in a when people are describing a situation like that, if I go onto a college campus and I bring up the idea of truth, people go, yeah, that's the thing I'd really like to hear about. I heard all that postmodern stuff, but I'm interested to find out if you can really know that to be true. Because honestly, that could be life-changing. If there's a fellow by the name of Jesus who claimed to be God in human flesh and conquered death on our behalf, that's something I want to know about if it could be known to be true. They don't dismiss it. They live in the everyday world like you and I do, and they have to look both ways before crossing the street, and they have to read the label before feeding their baby food. And so they have to use rationality constantly, moment by moment. And I think that comes into play when we're doing some sort of religious quest, too. And a lot of people on college campuses are really involved in a religious quest, whether they even admit it or not.
Yeah, no, fascinating. I do think the search for truth, while not believing in truth, is maybe one of the defining moments of this current cultural moment. But part of the weird thing for me is that, you know, I have a kind of a spiritual discipline that I ask the Lord for His grace in, that I seek to share the gospel in person with somebody outside of my local church setting once a week. And one of the things that I had to learn when, you know, even like now that we live in Southern California, or before that I was in Chicago, is that, man, like everybody's on a different journey. Sometimes people think about evangelism, they think about formulas. And so you start with a formula and every person gets the same formula. If you were to die today, you know, before you go to heaven or hell, or, you know, well, the wages of sin is death, but the free gift of God is eternal life, you know, we're the Romans road, all of which I think is great. But with apologetics, everyone's starting at a different place. So having an apologetics conversation with a you know, a nominal Muslim, or having a apologetic conversation with a secular person, they start at a different point. So how do we take that into account when we're trying to have those kind of apologetics conversations, that it's just everyone's at such a different place?
Yeah, I think the key to that is just really enjoy the conversation yourself. Mm-hmm. You know, I went to a very hostile graduate program. I did not go, you know, study about Jesus at a you know, nice cozy seminary somewhere. I went to UC Santa Barbara and did religious studies, you know, for an MA and a PhD. And I was attracted to that environment because I like having the spiritual conversations that are quite edgy, and everybody's got lots of crazy different opinions. But I really have a deep interest in hearing other people's journeys, you know. And I was a grad student with people with all kinds of crazy journeys, and it was basically a fairly crazy journey on my own. So, but I just noticed having those conversations, if people would walk up to me and start a conversation, they knew I was safe ground and they'd met me before and we'd chatted before. So that always was, put a smile on my face, because I thought this person, sees me as safe territory to bring up their interesting questions. And that's where I had the most impact. And I was always enjoying the conversation. Some of my Christian colleagues, they were just anxious to get the truth out there. They wanted to counter every argument that came along. And that just wasn't the way to do that. Back to Dallas Willard's definition of apologetics, it's a ministry of helping people. And it's really not very helpful to be anxious and just kind of stuff answers down people's gullet.
Okay, so last question. Our audience is, of course, church planners or church planner adjacent sort of people. How do they become that kind of safe conversational partner that can help people on their spiritual journey? What are some, because you've trained hundreds upon hundreds of people in apologetics. How do they become, I mean, because I guess we can give them a lot of knowledge through the training, and we do that, or I'm thankful, and again, I'm thankful to be here as the dean. But the challenge is a lot of people are just not safe conversation partners with spiritually questioning people. So what advice do you give to our apologetic students and in general to pastors and church planners to be that safe person, to be a conversation partner to help point people to Jesus?
Yeah, I'm back to sound like a broken record here, but it's that knowledge base that breeds confidence, and it's the confidence that breeds the peace and the comfort in having a conversation. Like, this guy might disagree radically with me, but and I'm not even looking for common ground. I'm looking to have a good conversation. This looks like an interesting character. I wonder what it's like to be a Muslim, you know, in Lebanon these days. And guess what? People are very interested in sharing what that's like if they do sense you're safe. And it really is one of the most wonderful ways to open doors and move the ball forward in evangelism and church planting.
Fascinating. Good conversation. Craig Hazen, thanks for taking the time. Thanks to everyone for listening to the New Churches podcast. We'll see you next time in the next episode.
You've been listening to the New Churches podcast, brought to you by Send Network. If you like what you heard, take a few minutes to rate and review us or share this episode with a friend. It's the best way to show your support. To find more reliable resources to start your new church well, visit newchurches.com.